Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily dive into the top stories and wildest comment threads from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Saturday, March 14th, 2026, which means we are looking back at the top stories from yesterday, Friday, March 13th. Welcome to episode 334.
We have a really packed show today. We are talking about a massive open source intelligence drop regarding Meta's lobbying efforts, a super handy tool to figure out if your machine can run local AI, a beautiful essay on the new MacBook Neo, a Figma-like design tool for terminal interfaces, and the release of Vite 8.0, which promises to make web development a whole lot faster.
Let us start with the biggest story of the day, pulling in almost 1,200 points. The title is Meta Platforms, Lobbying, Dark Money, and the App Store Accountability Act. This was a GitHub repository posted by a user named Shay Coleman, and it is a deep dive into how Meta is allegedly pushing state legislation to shift the burden of age verification onto Apple and Google.
Right. So the context here is the App Store Accountability Act, or ASAA. If passed, this would require app stores to verify a user's age before they can download an app. That means the social media platforms themselves face zero new compliance mandates. The repo claims Meta spent a record $26.3 million on federal lobbying in 2025 and funded a grassroots group called the Digital Childhood Alliance to push this legislation.
The Hacker News comments really zoomed out to look at the bigger picture here. A user named 5plus had a fantastic take that basically said, if you are reading this purely as a child safety or campaign finance story, you are missing the broader architectural war. They called it the inevitable, scorched earth retaliation for Apple's app tracking transparency rollout from a few years back.
Oh, absolutely. Apple cost Meta billions by cutting off their data pipeline at the OS level, claiming the privacy moral high ground. Now, Meta is returning the favor. By pushing this law, Meta is forcing Apple to build and maintain this wildly complex state-by-state identity verification API and forcing them to take on the legal liability for it. It is kind of a genius, albeit terrifying, chess move by Mark Zuckerberg.
It really is, Sarah. But there was another fascinating angle in the comments. A user named Jayers pointed out something highly suspicious about the research methodology itself. The researcher explicitly stated they used the AI model Claude Opus to gather and analyze the data, and their research period was listed as March 11th to present. They dropped this massive investigative report just 2 days after starting.
Yeah, that sparked a big debate about AI-generated research. People were checking the raw documents provided in the repo and finding that the AI hid a bunch of forbidden errors when trying to scrape PDFs. But the researcher just published the AI's conclusions anyway without double-checking the blind spots. It is a very 2026 problem, Mike. Using an LLM to connect the dots on campaign finance, but maybe letting it hallucinate a few of the connections.
Moving on to our next story, which got over 1,000 points. It is a website simply called CanIRun.ai. It is exactly what it sounds like. You go to the site, it detects your hardware using browser APIs like WebGPU and tells you which AI models your machine can actually handle.
This is so needed right now. The landscape of local models has exploded over the last couple of years, and it is exhausting trying to figure out if you have enough VRAM for Llama 3.18B or if you need to step down to a smaller Qwen model. The site gives you a tier list, from S tier for models that run perfectly, down to F for models that will just melt your laptop.
The comments were a goldmine for local AI enthusiasts. There was a lot of love for the new Qwen 3.59B model. One user called it a small, thinking, agentic, tool-using creature with very good internal chains of thought. They mentioned a new cache architecture that allows for linear memory expansion, meaning you can process massive documents on a standard consumer GPU like an NVIDIA 3060.
I love how people are anthropomorphizing these models now. Calling it a creature actually sparked a pretty funny philosophical debate in the thread. Another user jumped in to correct them, saying it is not thinking and it is not a creature, and if you feel sorrow when you kill the computer process, you need to see a psychiatrist immediately.
Hacker News never misses a chance for a pedantic debate about consciousness. But practically speaking, Sarah, it is amazing how capable these small models have become. People are building little local harnesses to have them parse logs, organize emails, and do home automation tasks. It's not going to replace the massive cloud models for heavy coding just yet, but for local, private, always-on tasks, the 8 to 14 billion parameter range is the absolute sweet spot right now.
Our third story is a really touching blog post by Sam Henry Gold titled, "This is not the computer for you.
It's about the newly released MacBook Neo, which Apple is selling for $599. It has an A18 Pro chip, 8 gigs of RAM, and very limited ports. All the tech reviewers are calling it a Chromebook killer and saying it is a sensible machine for sensible tasks, but definitely not for professionals or creatives.
But Sam argues that those reviewers are missing the point entirely. He talks about how obsession actually works. Nobody starts with the perfect tool. You start with whatever you can get your hands on and you push it until it breaks. He shared this great story about running Final Cut Pro X on a 2006 Core 2 Duo iMac with 3 gigs of RAM when he was 9 years old.
I loved that part. He was editing system files, faking sick to watch Steve Jobs' last keynote, and just exploring the edges of what the machine could do. His argument is that the MacBook Neo gives a kid the complete behavioral contract of the Mac. It runs Mac OS, it has the terminal, you can download Blender or Xcode. Yes, it will get hot, and yes, you will see the spinning beach ball, but you are hitting the limits of physics and computing, not an artificial software wall.
Right. He contrasted it with Chromebooks, saying a Chromebook's ceiling is made of web browser. If a kid tries to run a heavy 3D modeling app on a lockdown school Chromebook, they do not learn about memory limits. They just learn that Google or their school IT admin decided they are not allowed to do that. Those are completely different lessons.
The comments were just a massive nostalgia trip. Everyone was sharing what garbage hardware they cut their teeth on. Old Emacs, ancient Windows machines, you name it. Though some people did defend Chromebooks, pointing out that earlier models let you drop into a developer mode and run Debian Linux.
True, but the author actually replied in the thread, pointing out that modern school-issued Chromebooks are locked down to basically act as kiosks. The beauty of the Mac for him was progressive disclosure. You start on the happy path, but the terminal and the system files are right there waiting for you to mess with them. The Neo is definitely going to be the origin story for a lot of future developers.
Let us shift gears to some developer tools. Story number 4 is TUI Studio, a visual terminal UI design tool. It got around 570 points. It's essentially a Figma-like visual editor for terminal applications. You can drag and drop components like buttons, tables, and tabs onto a canvas, and it exports the code for frameworks like Ink, Bubble Tea, and Textual.
This is super cool because building complex terminal interfaces by hand can be incredibly tedious. You're dealing with ANSI escape codes and weird layout constraints. But of course, because this is Hacker News, the top comment thread immediately devolved into an argument about what actually constitutes a terminal user interface.
Oh yeah. One user came in hot, saying, "This is nonsensical and there is nothing textual about the UIs being shown." Their argument was that once you start adding mouse clickable tabs, buttons, and checkboxes, you have left terminal UX behind, and it's just a graphical user interface LARPing as a terminal app.
I thought that was a bit harsh. Another user pushed back by bringing up Borland TurboVision from the DOS era. TurboVision had edit controls, list boxes, radio buttons, and built-in mouse support decades ago, so rich terminal interfaces are actually a very old concept.
Exactly. And the whole point of a terminal app is that it runs in a text session, over SSH, without needing a graphics server. There was a good point made about how richer interfaces were the norm before graphical OSs took over. Think about old DOS tools or WordPerfect. I think TUI Studio is a great idea. If we are going to build terminal tools, they might as well be intuitive and look good, and not take weeks to manually position every single character block.
Our final story for today is the release of Vite 8.0, which pulled in over 500 points. The big news here is that Vite has completely overhauled its architecture. Since the beginning, Vite used a dual bundler setup. It used ESBuild for fast development and Rollup for production builds. But with version 8, they have moved to a single, unified, Rust-based bundler called Rolldown.
This is a massive shift. They are reporting that Rolldown delivers up to 10 to 30 times faster builds while maintaining full compatibility with the existing Rollup and Vite plugin ecosystems. Companies in the beta reported insane improvements, like production build times dropping from 46 seconds to just 6 seconds.
That kind of speed improvement is life-changing for a front-end team. But the Hacker News discussion took a really interesting philosophical turn. One commenter wondered aloud how much computing power and human time the industry has wasted over the years just accepting that builds take a long time. We built our workflows, our coffee breaks, and massive caching layers around slow tools.
And that led to a broader complaint about software efficiency in general. People started venting about how most production software is orders of magnitude slower than it needs to be.
the classic target was Electron apps that use multiple gigabytes of RAM to do basically nothing.
Yeah, a user named Shimon brought up how inefficient self-hosted solutions have become. They mentioned simple analytics or scheduling tools requiring 2 gigs of RAM just to idle. They made the point that a $5 virtual private server should be more than enough to host an entire suite of software for a small business, but modern software bloat makes that impossible.
It is a valid frustration. We have access to incredible hardware now, but software layers have just expanded to consume all of it. That is why projects like Rolldown and the broader push towards rewriting core web tooling in Rust or Go are so popular on Hacker News right now. Developers are finally clawing back some of that performance.
Well, that is a wrap for today's top stories. From Meta's dark money chess games to the beauty of learning on a $600 Mac, it has been a pretty classic Hacker News day.
It really has. Thank you so much for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with your team or drop us a review.
We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories. Until then, keep pushing those limits, whether you are running local AI or just trying to get your Vite build under 5 seconds. See you tomorrow.